This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
This morning, I thought I would sort of pull back a little bit and go back to what we started with, and sort of summarize where we've been. And say a few things. Jacques-Do, you're going to be leaving before or after lunch?
Right after lunch.
Right after lunch.
Yeah.
So there are some things that I want you to hear before you leave. And I also want to say that I admire your spirit and practice. So, You all are truly an amazing bunch. So for those of you who may be taking this in by Zoom or later, we have these Dharma talks in the morning, and then in the afternoon we have Dharma dialogue, and they've been getting richer and richer as time goes on. Like, that's the energy, a lot of it has to do with the energy of Sesshin, but also with your spirits. Your practice spirits and your spirits is your expression. So that I'm, for that I'm really deeply grateful. Thank you. So this sheet here, my first handout. We started with, the theme this week has been intimate. Dizong asked Fayan, "Where are you going?" Fayan said, "Around on pilgrimage." Dizong said, "What is the purpose of pilgrimage?" Fayan said, "I don't know." Dizong said, "Not knowing is most intimate." And so the questions I had were, what is this not knowing, and what gets in the way of intimate? The next we have this from Bodhidharma. If you use your mind to study reality, you won't understand either your mind or reality. If you study reality without using your mind, you'll understand both. Those who don't understand understanding. And those who understand, understand not understanding. And then this from the Buddha, this teaching on dependent origination, which starts, by and large, Kachana, this world relies on the duality of it is and it is not. But one who sees the arising of the world as it happens with complete understanding has no sense of it is not about the world. And one who sees the ceasing of the world as it happens with complete understanding has no sense of it is about the world. And in the sutta, this is a summation of what follows in that sutta on the 12 links, the paticca-samuppada, dependent origination, this existing that exists, this arising that arises, this not existing that no longer exists, this ceasing that ceases. And then again from the Buddha, this is how you should train, Bahia. In what is seen, let there be just the seen. In what is heard, let there be just the heard. In what is sensed, let there be just the sensed. In what is cognized, let there be just the cognized. Then, Bahia, you will not be in that. When you are not in that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, then you are neither here nor there, nor in between. This, just this, is the end of suffering. So we looked at, you know, we looked at the Buddha's teachings on the, you know, they're all collected, you know, all focused on the five aggregates: form, feelings, perceptions, impulses, and consciousness. And it's in that dynamic, just those qualities, those heaps, those skandhas, in there that it comes, the sense that arises of self. It's just how the human being functions. And in there, that sense rises. And that's that separation, sense of self. I am, you are, I, that sense of separation. Then we looked at the, we looked at the 12 links. I'm focusing on the second and the eighth and ninth links, the formations, and then it could be either thirst or craving, and grasping or clinging. So, right in there. And again, you know, from the Buddhist perspective, we see right there the thirst and the grasping is that moment of I am and you are. The formations are our habit formations. There are our conditioned states. Okay. And our conditioned states, you know, are the how our autonomic nervous systems are conditioned, our, you know, the development of our autonomic nervous system in our brains. And our, you know, also our perceptions, how we perceive the world and how far that goes back. How we relate to each other, how we relate to each other, you know, from the attachment perspective, is established in the first year of life. But then, where does that attachment, those attachments keep going back, unless something happens to interrupt them for the better or the worse? So our conditioned states and that how it shapes, okay, and that, you know, we can look at, you know, for that moment of, let's go over to, we haven't done this yet, but go over the, somebody pointed this out yesterday, we go over to six senses and contact. Okay. That moment is how, you know, the moment of, you know, contact, how things are perceived. Contact, feelings would be pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. And from what we know about human functioning today is that is the autonomic nervous system. That's a fight, flight, or freeze dynamic. So it's an animal reaction, survival reaction, and how that's been conditioned. And then I am. I don't like this. It shouldn't be this way. I don't like this. It doesn't fit my grammar. And then when we look at, to use your mind to study reality, you won't understand your mind, either your mind or reality. So then we looked at, bilateral brain. But we, even before we get to the bilateral brain, we can begin to see how perception is skewed based on our habit formation. Begin to see that and appreciate that skewing of perception. Oh, I forget. You know, coming back to the sense of self. Joe Bolte Taylor says, when we are born, we have no sense of individuality, and our two brain hemispheres are similar in both their structure and in what they value. Over time, however, our left brain cells develop ability to define the physical boundaries of where we begin and end, and with that, the identification of self. We gain the ability to perceive ourselves as individuals who are separate from the whole. It is in these moments that the droplet of our left brain's individual consciousness becomes separate. It is that those moments that the droplet of our left brain's individual consciousness becomes separate from the sea of cosmic consciousness from which it came. Another book I recommend, highly recommend, Beyond Tranquility, Buddhist Meditations, an Essay in Verse by Charles Chanot. I was reading it last night. Why don't I see it? Well, I'll go with this and then come back to it this afternoon. Presence is not a device of consciousness only. Start out. While it is useful to give a name to the psychosomatic process in constant transformation, to think that this I is an autonomous entity completely separated from this process is a mistake with far-reaching consequences. The word me, even more than the word rose, denotes uncountable phenomena, since it is used by each person to designate herself. Me is neither short nor tall, neither intelligent nor confused, neither Western nor Eastern. And this quote from Arya Deva, what is this I who is I for me and not I for you? Like here and there, I is a term adrift, the same label for different phenomena, a mere convention of speech. And when we looked at the bilateral brain, we looked at, you know, Joe Bolte Taylor breaks the bilateral brain into left thinking and emotion, right thinking and emotion. This is, and I see no reason to doubt this because this comes from her own personal experience and she's a neuroanatomist. The way, you know, look at, you know, concise, precise, but also focused on me, fixed, judgmental, seeks differences. You know, it has these, you know, and the emotional is, you know, bullies, righteous, selfish, critical, constricted, rigid. And when we look at the right, you know, it's more open. It's focused on we, the sense of oneness and interconnectedness, what we talk about in this practice, and what a lot of spiritual practices talk about. So we begin to, you know, appreciate you know, and Reginald Ray said that the left brain is a processor. It doesn't take in much new. It's a processor, it's a recycler, but it's also our manager. It thinks in linear ways, and it's our language center. It helps us tell our stories, to share our experience, to make sense of and tell our stories. So, but we're getting this sense here when we, in our sutras and, you know, Buddhist literature, this sense of this split of duality, this dual split, it starts in us. The form, the conventional world, and then that sense, you know, and Jill Bolte Taylor said that when she experienced her stroke, and her left brain went offline, there was no separate sense. There was none of this. She couldn't tell where she ended and this began. It was all energy, all this sense of interconnectedness. So, you know, she's sharing with us in a very real way the dynamics that we talk about in this practice. And when we move into the you know, then what emanates out? So the, and so when we're, you know, the talking about the it is and it is not, and when there, you know, when there is cognition, let there be just cognition. When there is feeling, let there be just feeling. What gets in the way of that is that proliferation that goes on out from that I. So, in our discussions, there, you know, there's, you know, there's, you know, this, well, what, you know, and I pointed out the Buddha said, you know, essentially in all this, he said, I saw how the house, the self, was constructed. I took it apart, and I'm not building it back. That's kind of, for the ego, that's a scary proposition. And the questions then, you know, the sense of questions in our discussion is, how do we function? You know, it is, you know, Shen Sheng Ming. You know, it says, and Dogen says this, and it's, and there are the koans. Koans says, you know, don't get tangled in the world, don't lose yourself in emptiness. It's not an either or proposition, it's a dance. It's making our way. It is making our way in. As it amidst the it ising and it is notting. Okay. It's being alive too. When does a wheel, the wheels get out of balance, out of alignment? How do we, you know, move towards, you know, and it's a natural thing too. What is it? Our natural alignment. How do we attune to that? Now, this is what our practice does. Our practice attunes us towards that natural alignment. It helps us to flourish as human beings and helps us help others flourish in our sense, in our attuning. Our world isn't that way so much, and it hasn't been for a long time. So when I think it makes this actually smarter, this practice. So Judy threw a wrench in this. Started about, you know, the Buddha was had a highly analytical mind. I said, yeah. Left brain. That was how he used it. I saw in a documentary one time that Einstein, you know, when he was coming into the theory of relativity, he was doing something like Zazen. And I can't remember now that, you know, another major development in quantum theory, an early development. I can't remember the physicist's name, but it just, you know, this, you know, these things, you know, they come to these people, you know. And it's my sense, you know, when we were talking the other day about, you know, a left brain dynamic is that when it tries harder and harder, it actually squeezes down possibility. Like when we're looking for that word, and then when we stop looking, it goes, oh, the word just right there at all. I think my sense is that we become, you know, we can become more creative as human beings and can relate to each other and have more awareness of consequences of action. More attunement. Maybe we create, do business in a different way. Maybe we tend to the world in a different way. Without this me, so prevalent, and it begins to shrink. You know, and we're householders here, right? I was thinking, you know, maybe a good, you know, a good text for householders to really start taking in is Vimalakirti Sutra. A householder. Figure in Buddhist literature. An accomplished, you know, a realized being, but one who functioned in the world. Did business in the world. Maybe that would be, maybe we should be paying more attention to that one. Does this summation work for you so far? Is that pretty accurate? You know, this practice encourages intimate, it fosters and nurtures intimate with the melting away of self. I experience it more and more, and it's really a good thing in old age. You know, having lived a good part of a life that's been in that this dynamic. This stopping. So, you know, life is a pilgrimage, right? We came here on pilgrimage. You didn't know exactly what was going to happen, other than you might have some aches and pains while you're sitting, and some good food. We usually have really good food here, and that hasn't disappointed this machine, has it? But you didn't know what to expect. You came in, and you were pretty open to what this old man has to say. You know, bringing together Buddhist psychology, Western psychology, you know, just dipping into neuroscience. It lines up, you know, what I said earlier, it all lines up for me. The two line up really well to stay true to, you know, as possibly as I can and as what in what I know, which I am not a scholar, but in what I know, how it lines up. So you can take it and see what it does for your life. I hope it enriches your practice. But then, you know, we've talked about the dance. How do we dance? How do we dance with this selfing, with our conditioned states? So I go back to Bodhidharma, to use the mind. And then I think of Dogen, you know, thinking, not thinking. What is this thinking, not thinking? I heard a talk by Norman Fisher, and he was puzzling. Norman Fisher, he's puzzling that question: what is thinking, not thinking? And he told a Japanese teacher and translator who sort of put it, you know, ignore it, just don't pay any attention. I've often told myself, okay, Chuck, I'm thanks, but no thanks. I'm not buying any today. And that's good. That's good, you know. But there's, as I've said, you know, there is an automatic thing in this the way the left brain functions. It takes in new in the way of perspective, and there's a pushing away dynamic. There's a repression, a repressing dynamic. Our system, if it's not familiar, if it doesn't fit in with its, familiar contexts, and if it doesn't feel safe and everything, it's pushed, it's repressed. And that happens a lot. It's always happening. It happens in your zazen. That's, and so I'm, how do we dance with that? And, and I've shared with you that in my work as a therapist and what I've trained is coming more and more into somatic awareness. And that's coming more, I'm reading more and more from certain circles of Buddhism about that too, bringing that into practice. Reggie Ray, Charles Deneau has his movement thing that he does to bring us more into our body. There seems to be something cooking there more in the Tibetan world, but my knowledge and everything is kind of limited there, but just what I'm coming across. And so I'm encouraging that in us, because the Buddha did say, the first thing, the first foundation of mindfulness is body. The first aggregate is form, body. And that includes the whole thing. And, the definition of mindfulness that works for me is awareness of conditioned response to experience. And so, our histories are stored in our bodies, By the time it gets here, it's being interpreted. And, the storylines kick in. And another thing too is, the way the left brain works, the right sees things in the big pictures as like, boom, right here. The left is busy picking up bits and pieces and assembling them into things. And if you, and in that process, it, it, it doesn't wait before the whole package is assembled to say that's that. It's jumping ahead and saying, you know, based on this information at this point, it's jumping ahead and saying that. That's the way our brains work. Isn't that your experience? Mm-hmm. Already got it figured out. Before it has all together. You know, so the body, and I started this process with myself. I used it on myself. I did it with myself. And then, you know, okay, bring it to clients and to groups I work with. And it really shortens things with clients. You know, the reactivity, working with anxiety and stuff, really, you know, they respond to really well is, you know, these folks coming in and they got these years of histories, these years of narratives about who they are and who they're not. And then I say, I give them a little Buddha stuff without telling them it's Buddha stuff. And I say, that's just conditioned stuff. It's how you were conditioned. You had no say. And it may not seem fair. May not seem fair. But now it's your responsibility. Now that's here. It's here. It's what we work with. But it's not inherently who you are. Because if it was an inherent something, how could we change it? That's the beauty of the impermanence. So listening to the body, you know, tuning in, you know, how do we, you know, when there's thinking, I encourage, what does the thinking feel like? What do the emotions feel like? You know, the thinking, you know, thinking's there, you just turn in. And it reminds me of the road to Jikoji. When you come into Jikoji, what do? You come down. Maybe we're gonna call this the down and in something. We come down and in, and that's the move coming down and in under. We're not pushing away because you're coming in and Mr. Tenzo, and who likes direct, you're coming in directly into it. Directly into it. What's here? And then we're in the experience, and then we see what it tells us. We see what it teaches us. We see what it shows us. You know, we're working with pain. You know, we learn to soften around pain, and physical and emotional pain. We learn to soften around it. We learn to, you know, we're in our conditioned response to experience directly. And we're not, it's not a manipulation. It might be seen as a technique, but I don't, because it's just turning into. Dogen said, learn the step backward that turns the light in. And for me, this is it. This is, you know, I feel the reactivity and it's, you know, turn in. But I also point out, you know, we in a lot of this talk, we're talking, it's kind of negative. We focus on the negative side of things. But you can also do that anytime, any experience, and learn from it. What you're going to learn is it doesn't last. As we were saying yesterday, you know, the thing about desire, you know, about the wanting, the best part of it is the wanting. We begin to see that we're in that. We're in and experiencing the want. And when we're there, and when we're seeing, and it's all of a sudden we're waking up to this want, all of this proliferation around over just simply what is. Not into. So, here's something I would encourage between now and our dialogue this afternoon is that as you're doing, soji, notice if you can, and you just be with, and you're as you're going about, just noticing when the overlay starts, the overlay of something starts, the storyline starts. Start noticing that. You may feel it in your body first. You may feel like this damn weed won't come out. You'll feel that is something. Or not. You may say, well, you look up. And then you go, oh, Jokoji is such a sweet place. Instead of just directly experiencing Jokoji. Your assignment for this afternoon.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.